So we continue with notes on the way, and as we know, these are mother's experiences of later on. Let me put it like that. Many of them are there in the agenda, and they are also here. This is a concise version of the agenda. There are some experiences which are here which are not in the agenda. This also I must mention, which I have wondered why, but it is true. So let me read something very interesting. Mother has an experience, let me put it in perspective. Now these are experiences belonging to the future. So all the experiences are in her body, and all these experiences are indicating the way towards the future. So one of the experiences on 19th November 1969, and at the end we will read about this experience. She says something very interesting. But she says that at the end of the night, I had the experience that was the explanation. And for 2 hours, I lived in an absolutely clear perception of the why and how of creation. So she, now in this experience, she sees all these opposites unite. The supramental experience of the body, because in supramental consciousness, there are no contraries. Even what we call as good and evil, they join there. When mother initially spoke of this experience, the disciple, people didn't understand that, good and evil both are there, joined together, how can it be? Then she explained later on through this, which is there as a footnote, that basically they become, they change. So good changes into the divine good, not the human good. Human good sometimes can even be a cause of evil. As the mother takes a dig at the doctors sometimes, that they do many things out of goodwill, but an ignorant goodwill is not necessarily good. So this one part. And second is, evil also changes and becomes something else. So slightly, we'll read a little bit of this experience. And evil, page 199, and evil, what we call evil, has an indispensable place in the whole. It will not be felt as evil the moment one becomes conscious of that. In the super mind, you don't see it as evil. You see it as what we may, from the earthly point of view, call as a necessary evil. Like a little while back, we were discussing that if you are too attached and you are sincere that you want to come out of this attachment, because it is coming in the way of you and the divine. Not you want to come out because it's become a burden to you. That's a different story. So we may want to come out simply because our ego finds it burdensome. That's different. But if we want to come out because it's coming in the way of our relation with the divine, our pursuit of the highest, then the divine will make sure you are out of it, if necessary, through a good little beating you out of this. So this is the whole process. And evil, what we call evil, it will not be felt as evil the moment one becomes conscious of that necessarily. Evil is this infinitesimal element looking at its infinitesimal consciousness. But as consciousness is essentially one, it resumes, regains the consciousness of the unity, the two together. So the word she uses, the psychological movement of this infinitesimal consciousness, looking at the infinitesimal consciousness, the experiences of jealousy. That she explains later. So when one is completely turned back upon oneself, and that is the source of all misery, depression, this, that. But in the supramental creation, it never loses contact with the unity. So each element of creation has its own place in the whole. Right now we have to make the other movement. No, I don't want to think about myself. I don't want to look at myself. I should be. Whatever thing helps you to come out of your little self helps. Like mother says, in physical illnesses, one of her ways is just see, would not look at that part at all. And one would come out. So, but in the supramental world, this too has its own divine possibility, but it's not cut off from the unity of the rest. So this is the difference. So she explains all that. And then in that she sees the reconciliation of all the opposites, like eternity and progress and unity and diversity. And then she says one sentence, very interesting. All human reactions, even the highest, the purest, the noblest, appeared so childish. So as long as we are tied to all these things, all that has, we are very far from the divine. And then something very interesting, which is what I want to read. And what she once again reaffirms, of course several places Mother has spoken about it. But after the experience of 19th November 1969, it becomes even more crystal clear at every level in the earth, upon earth. There are no words that can explain the magnificence of the grace. First she says, there are no contraries. No contraries. Not even contradictions. I say no contraries. Evil is simply holding one's vision on one small angle. Then one says it is evil. But if you see the totality and when you see the vast movement of time and landscape and tasks, you know, possibilities, then it becomes something else. And individuals are miserable to the extent to which they are not conscious of it. Not conscious of what? About grace. And take a false position in regard to what is happening to them. So when we take a very cut-off position, cut-off from the unity of things, even cut-off from the stream of our lives, then we call it an evil. Many things, when we look back, this is a simple experience actually. Many things in life, when you are 40, you laugh at things when you were 20. And that time it looks like everything is shattered. When you are 60, you laugh at 40. And if you are 80, you say, ah, life is blossoming. And Mother says that, but she says it's very unfortunate that we have a short lifespan. So by the time life blossoms, you are really ready to lead a life. You are already, and all over the world, there will be these suggestions. Oh, you are 60, now you should slow down. You are 80, now you should take rest. But actually, by then you have learned, even ordinarily, that okay, many things you can laugh at. And then she said, life as it is can be lived in that consciousness. This is her experiment. And she says, you don't have to withdraw into some heights of trance to experience that. It can be lived. But it is then lived quite well. Nothing needs to be changed. What is to be changed changes itself quite naturally. That's the supramental action. And so many times one sees when one has turned to the mother, things will come when you need them to go through something. And then they will just vanish, disappear. And you may try to wonder, where has it gone? It has gone. Because that's how the supramental action proceeds. It just, and you have done nothing except that inwardly your aspiration must continue. And then they go their own way, wherever they have to go. So she says, I am going to give you an example. For a few days I had some difficulty with it, some person, she's not naming the person. Pressure had to be put on him to correct some of his movements. See, this is how the divine works. So people often say that why doesn't Mother and Sri Aurobindo say what you should do and what you should not do? Because they don't want to leave it to us. If they say what you should do and what you should not do, and then you don't do, don't listen, that is disobedience of the divine. That has repercussions. So what she does, just like a flower blossoms from within, she begins to change us from within. Just recently someone said, oh, I came to Pondicherry and though it was against many odds, financially it was not a wise thing, otherwise it was not a wise thing, but I feel that I have changed deep inside. Nothing outside, but something has deep inside changed. So this change begins like that, and then slowly it comes to the surface, and then even the circumstances. Today, so there is a person on whom she has put a pressure to correct. Today he was conscious of it in quite a different way from the usual. And in the end, he said that he was on the way to change. And mother says that is true. He genuinely felt it. And all that not only without a word, but without any movement of the consciousness for putting pressure. All is done automatically as an imposition of the truth without any necessity of intervention. Simply to remain in the true consciousness, that is all, that is sufficient. And in everybody's life, when one has sufficiently progressed on the yoga, all by her grace, one can see how the grace works, how things change, how you change. And many people who look only the surfaces of things, they may not understand it. But if you genuinely look inside, you see that how you are changing inside. Things that were seemingly impossible, they begin to change. And so on and so forth. And she speaks of, this is a transformation which goes on. One is conscious in a golden vastness. My child, it is wonderful, luminous, golden, peaceful, eternal, all-powerful. She has given several images to us. These images are so helpful. Luminous, golden, peaceful, eternal, all-powerful. No word is there to express it indeed. This wonder regarding the grace is a thing that surpasses all comprehension. With its clear seeing kindliness, at the end of the Dhammapada commentaries, which is of course her last classes, the other Wednesday last class and Friday last classes, so Dhammapada commentary ends on one of those. I think it's Friday last class. So after all the mental mind training methods and thought training methods and changing your attitude, at the end he says, we are grateful to the Buddha for showing us the way. Then he says, but there is one thing which is missing. And then she says, it is about the grace. That one factor, that grace, that overturns everything. If you see the commentaries on Dhammapada, toward the end it will come. That we are grateful. He has taught us many things, beautiful things. But what is missing is that element of grace, which is what makes it so special here. I have already had the experience, partially, when one is in this state of inner harmony and no part of the attention is turned towards the body, the body works perfectly well. It is this self-concentration which upsets everything. And not only self-concentration, people will force your attention. So often I have this issue, somebody will say, for last number of years, have your weight gone down? I said, earlier I used to explain, no, it's the same 76, the same old fellow. I wish I lost some weight. So this was my way of saying, please don't notice it. It's not bad if you lose some weight. Then in between I used to get a little irritated. Because you suddenly think of the body. So I had to tell them, look here, it's nobody's business. And our eyes should not be fixed on the body. Our eyes should be fixed on what is happening inside. Now then you mature enough. Because people will continue, you know. So I have stopped bothering about it. As if there is nothing else in the world to notice except your body. So she says, And this I have observed many times, many times. In reality, one does make oneself ill. It is the narrowness of consciousness, the division. If you let it work, there is, everywhere there is a consciousness and a grace that can do everything so that all may go well. And it is because of this imbecility that all goes wrong. It is strange. And then she uses a term for this egocentric imbecility. The egocentric imbecility, it is that which Sri Aurobindo calls the old man. It is truly interesting. As a doctor, it's very problematic because somebody shows and you're, okay, it'll be fine, you're right. The person thinks you haven't given sufficient time and attention, but actually you are deliberately don't want to focus too much. But sometimes people think, whereas if you take, examine, give too much attention, then you are a good doctor. Yes, but you are reinforcing the illness. You found something? Just I'll read since I did mention about it. So, okay, so she says, such is the conclusion of the Dhammapada, and if we have put into practice to use its image, only a mustard seed of all that has been taught to us, well, we have not wasted our time. This at the end of the Dhammapada classes. Then she says, there is one thing which is not spoken of here. In the Dhammapada, a supreme disinterestedness and a supreme liberation is to follow the discipline of self-perfection, the march of progress, not with a precise end in view as described here, the liberation of Nirvana, but because this march of progress is the profound law and the purpose of earthly life. And then she says, there is a deep trust in the divine grace. So first is about the progress which that's missing there. Not because Nirvana is the goal, but because you must keep progressing. Then she says, there is a deep trust in the divine grace. A total surrender to the divine will. An integral addition to the divine plan which makes one do the thing to be done without concern for the result, that is the perfect liberation. That is truly the abolition of suffering. The consciousness is filled with an unchanging delight, and each step you take reveals the marvel of splendor. Then she concludes by saying, we are grateful to the Buddha for what he has brought for human progress. So see, now she's like the word. Everybody brings something. And as I told you at the beginning, we shall try to realize a little of all the beautiful things he has taught us. But we shall leave the goal and the result of our endeavor to the supreme wisdom that surpasses all understanding. And it is so beautiful. Otherwise, so often I have seen people doing a practice. Now behind it, it's the experience they want. It is the ego. And that spoils everything. That's the divine's prerogative. Whether he'll give, not give, when, it's his. And we are not wanting an experience. It's the joy of that divine remembrance, joy of living that truth which you feel is the truth to be lived. And then it is up to the divine to do with it whatever the divine wants. Now a very good piece of advice he gives on 10th December 1969. Every piece of advice is wonderful, but this one is especially needed for all of us. But Mother's way of saying it. Surely a big stride will have been taken when man will naturally turn to perfect himself instead of waiting to find perfection in others. So today somebody wrote to me saying, but so and so person, what I don't like about that person is hypocrisy. I said, show me one person in the world who doesn't have hypocrisy in some way or the other. The moment you try to put up before anyone in the world a show, you are being a hypocrite. You are not being what you truly are, your normal natural self. Even sometimes you want to put up a show of being so-called normal natural self. See, it can be take so many forms. And you become extra in one direction. Any kind of show and sham is hypocrisy. And all the time one is doing that. And that's why when mother was asked that what is the thing that supermind will drive away? She says, drive away. Then she says, if we accept what Sri Aurobindo has said, then why should it drive away anything? It is here to transform everything. And then after a pause, he says, it'll drive away hypocrisy. All the artificiality. And that's what today children are doing. One thing one must say, the good thing about them is that they are pretty open about what they are really honestly feeling. And because they don't like to, you know, and for their advantage or somebody's advantage. This is automatically, because hypocrisy, artificiality of life, all this is contrary to the divine manifestation. The reversal is the very basis of all true progress. The first human instinct, which we must get rid of course, it is the fault of circumstances, the fault of people, the fault, this one is like this, that one is like that, the other one, and this goes on indefinitely. And if we can't find anybody to find fault, we find fault in God and His plan. Fault of God, fault of somebody has to be blamed. And poor God cannot explain, or if He explains, we won't be willing to listen. He has explained everything in the life divine. Or if we read the explanation, we are not ready to accept. Always it is somebody else's fault, and poor God has to take all this. So that's why He has stopped explaining. So everything He has explained and already given. So she says, the first step, the very first step is to say, if I were as I ought to be, or if this body were as it ought to be, all would be perfectly all right for it. If in order to progress you were to wait for others to progress, you would have to wait indefinitely. That is the very first thing that is to be circulated everywhere. So there are people who keep fighting all their life. Why should I change? You change first. You are not admitting your fault. Why will I admit my fault? And it goes on indefinitely. So she says, never put the blame on others or on circumstances. I have often felt this is what true freedom is. Autonomy. Autonomy is you take charge of your life. Whatever may be happening in your life. Whoever may be doing it. And actually deep inside it may be an attachment that you are holding. It may be a grudge you are holding. It may be an anger within you. It may be an expectation within you. 100 things. A certain attitude within you. But nobody else is responsible. It may be just a weakness inside. But it's nobody else but me. And I have to discover what is inside me which is causing the tremor. For example, sometime when somebody is angry and you get very disturbed. So, say, because of the person's anger you have got disturbed. No, because I am weak I get disturbed. As simple as that. Or somewhere probably I give credence to what the person is saying. If I am strong, I can just laugh at it. So ultimately it is within oneself that one has to work. Whether the person got angry, right, wrong, all that is irrelevant. One can even take one step further and see, is there a truth behind what the person is saying. So this is my own version of Sach Ka Samna. It's a game which I love to play. So Sach Ka Samna is you confront the truth inside you. Don't cover it with things which are very nice, pleasant, seeming, which blaming others, but look at things as they are. And it's very interesting, very, very fascinating discovery. For instance, you can literally see what made you get attached to a particular person. You can go to that extent where you can see your vulnerable point. For instance, I can just share that how these things can work. At one point, I discovered that just name of someone. So I used to feel very happy that, oh, outward figure form doesn't attract me. But the name, if the name is beautiful, it carries in me some kind of a, you know, I was vulnerable to a name. All the rest was as if the person was embodying that name. Far from it, but that name. And I'm just saying that how you can make those discoveries. I still remember long back, maybe 13, 14, I was writing a story. And the story starts with the name of a woman. Charulata. I don't know any Charulata in my life, thankfully. Now it won't matter. But I write Charulata Aninda Sundariti. Now in that whole thing, what really touched me was the name. Is the story I am writing. See, if somebody came with the name of Charulata, so it struck a note somewhere. But Charulata may be Supanakha inside. So each one has their vulnerable points. Sometimes it's a voice, the tone, the modulation, all kinds of things. So one has to really threadbare see what is it that is attaching me, attracting me. Not that it's not about right or wrong. It's only in reference to your journey to the divine. Otherwise, life moves as it is. It's not about any moral notions but that's how one has to look inside carefully. Why? Because even in ordinary human relationships, if you look behind these appearances, physical form, figure, voice, etc., qualities, then you can touch the soul and love the soul. That is something so beautiful. There is a poem of Sri Aurobindo, Immortal Love. And there he speaks of this, that if I loved you for your beauty and your fairness and your hair, then my love would cease after some time. If I loved you for your sweet voice, because voice cannot remain the same, no, it begins to crack after some time. And then she says, even if I loved you for your qualities, heart of Ruth, time might pursue, might reach. But I have loved you for myself indeed. Change I exceed and am for time prepared. It takes time to understand this simple thing. Thank you for it. It makes it so much more, you know, beautiful. Some people say, no, we should have interactive. So, well, I'm interacting with myself and thankfully. But see, that's what he says. If I had wooed thee for thy color rare, cherished the rose in thee, or wealth of nature's brilliance in thy hair, O woman fair, my love might cease to be. Or had I sought thee for thy virtuous youth and tender, yearning speech. See how sees all that. Thy swift compassion and deliberate truth, O heart of Ruth, time might pursue, might reach. This poem we have done in collected poems, so I'm not. But just for the joy of reading. But I have loved thee for thyself indeed, and with myself have snared. Immortal to immortal, I made speed. Change I exceed, and am for time prepared. So even in normal life, so Sri Aurobindo is not telling us that just be concerned with yourself and don't bother about, you know. That's one part. It's a very good counsel not to have unnecessary conflicts. But it goes further. It's not about just detaching, cutting yourself from everyone. But looking behind all these appearances and touching that core of things. How Amrita, when mother would scold him. Only Amrita had the privilege of being scolded by the mother. Often enough means like a child, and he would be smiling and laughing and his head down, shaking his head. And somebody asked Amrit, Mother is scolding you. Vasi was scolding you. Do you know that? He said, yes, I know that. And you were smiling. He said, yes, because she loves me so much. Have you ever heard her scolding anybody like this? See, he could see. Behind even hate, you can see love. You hate, as long as you hate somebody, you love the person. So see, all these things, yeah, it's there. You just can't help it. It's there. And one has to release that love and remove that hate. So she says that that is the first thing to be circulated everywhere. Never put the blame on others or on circumstances. Because whatever the circumstances, even those that appear the worst, if you keep the true attitude and have the true consciousness, they will have no importance at all for your inner progress. No importance. I say this and I include even death. What does it matter? At one place she tells a disciple, he writes, I was having an experience and I got very scared and what may happen? So mother says, what may happen? You may die. That's it. Yes. What may happen? Of course, the tone is mine. She would have told in her own way. Unfortunately, you cannot capture the tone. But she says, what may happen? You may die. So what? So you are afraid about it? She talks about fear. Drive away the fear. Chutnaranji was telling me that. He would keep going and tell mother, mother, I have fear. Mother, I have fear. So one day he says, she scolded me. If you have fear, you cannot practice yoga. Go away. He says, I was shaken to my bits. He said, now I can't even tell her. Because earlier. And then she told him, you go. And he says, as I went, she even money was arranged, everything was arranged to drop him to Chennai or wherever next. And from there he will go. So he went. Then he described with his humor. 25% of my deep pain and all this vanished by the time I reached Chennai. Then 75% vanished by the time I reached this place, Kolkata. Then 100% when I reached my village. Now just imagine, how will people understand? Because that resistance comes up. It's not easy to live here. Because you have to face through the resistances. And if we start blaming others, then we had it. So one has to look inside and keep working. These are opportunities to look and discover and change oneself. But we should not tell this to others, because you know, once I did this mistake of saying, you know, it is a sign that you have to change yourself. The person retorted back, first you change yourself. I said, okay, I'm so sorry. You are right. Unasked advice should never be given. Though it was not exactly unasked advice. Somebody was describing the problem, so I said, so. Okay, so she says that. And then she concludes by saying, Sri Aurobindo had written that the notion of sin has been introduced to hasten progress. There is no reality of sin. And immediately, man saw sin in all others. He never saw it in himself. And then she says, Sri Aurobindo's sentence is charming. The sentence, one of the aphorisms, we have read it. The sense of sin was necessary in order that man might become disgusted with his own imperfections. It was God's corrective for egoism. But man's egoism meets God's device. It's a device, cunning played by God. By being very dully alive to its own sins and very keenly alive to the sins of others. So that's the story of Christ, we know. And yeah. So what do we do when we discover this movement? That's the next logical question. She says, don't suppress. If you suppress, you will never be able to look into it. So what causes suppression? Idea of right and wrong. That she says very clearly. It's there in one of her talks. That the idea of right and wrong leads to suppression. Because what happens? We want to put a nice figure for ourselves. So we cherish our sins wrong in private. But in front of the others, we play the, you know, flag bearer of right. And sometimes you'll see people very vocally, strongly speaking of, oh, this is so horrible, so wrong. Take it for granted that it deep inside the person bearing. And he is just, you know, trying to cover it up because he doesn't want to see it. Okay, but does it mean one should express? He says, no, that's not what he's saying. She's saying something interesting. So she says, the disciple asks, now I would like to know what is the key to cure without suppression. You have to become conscious of what is inside. Otherwise we justify. Precisely because the light is usually thrown and then the wrong movement is driven underground. The moment you see it, there is a tendency to pull it down. Mother says, yes, that is the general, that is a general rule. The opposite is to be done. Instead of driving it underground, it is to be offered. It is to place the thing, the movement itself, to project it into the light. Generally, it wriggles and refuses. So always after some time, but actually it's not my fault, it's not really so bad. Various kinds of justifications, self-forgetfulness, but she says it has to be offered. Now this is painful. You have to admit to yourself that there is a problem. But mother laughs, that is the only way. That is why this consciousness is so precious. He's talking now of the new consciousness, the supramental consciousness. It will show ruthlessly. It is truth consciousness. All these covers will not do. And that's why this yoga, not everybody is called to undertake the journey, because truth heals, cures the other day. But before curing, it hurts, like the injection, the surgery or the medicine. It's like a bitter medicine which will heal us. But initially it hurts to see. And so how to do it? Not with the idea of right and wrong, which a human conception needed at a certain stage. In ordinary life, one needs it to navigate. As long as one knows it is relative and there is something much higher, it's okay. You understand, there is only one way. The ego must go. That is all. It is that. All these are frames of the ego. I am Mr. Right. This is a frame of the ego. And various ways we make an image of ourselves. Then we want to maintain that image of ourselves. And with great pain. And then we maintain an image with great pain and the supermind demolishes it with equal ease, grace, when we turn to the grace. Otherwise, people can continue to keep the image, make it harder and harder, live like that without changing. That's different. Only when there, instead of I, there is nothing anymore, you know, it is all together flat like this. Gesture signifying something immense, smooth, without a wrinkle. Having a kind of, it is not even expressed by words, but a very stable sensation of what thou willest as thou willest. See, it is the ultimate mantra. And the mother's grace drives you to that point where you realize all those things that I asked were the foolish things. And if only I asked that you are the supreme wisdom, you decide, whatever. And it's so logical. If you look at it, the most logical thing to ask. You may be put into difficulties, but if you have this, that as thou willest, means it is part of my journey and process. So as thou willest, as thou willest, as thou willest, he says. This is the way. It is not even expressed by words, but a very stable sensation of what thou willest, as thou willest. It is that which does like this. That means with a capital T. This feeling of that, this conscious vastness, in the end you do see it. It's not a vision with images, but it is a vision. I do not know with what. But it is very concrete, much more concrete than the images. a vision of the vast force, this vast vibration which presses. And then the world which wriggles under it, and the thing which opens, and when it opens, that enters and spreads. This is the supramental action. This is how Mother works. How are we going to turn it into a system of asanas, pranayamas, breathing techniques, meditation? I don't know. It will press upon you till you open. And when you open, then it is done. It's like baby Krishna entering a house. He is not going to leave anything. You may have hidden the matki on top. You may have a demon inside. Everything will be gone. He will kill the demon and eat away the butter or distribute it. And then you will have nothing except belong to Krishna. You have no choice. So that's how the divine grace works. Divine Mother works like that. So this is the supramental action. And now we can see it is going on in the world. You have no choice. Can you imagine the president of Turkey? Whatever his name is, Erdogan. It seems there are rumors that he has run away. I mean, one cannot imagine sometime back he's trying to make a caliphate and do this and that. He has vanished for sure. But this is a very, very big news that he is afraid, because somebody who is standing in election, he is afraid that he is going to lose because he was trying to keep a facade. Now you see these things, how the pressure comes and things which we cannot expect. It is the hour of the unexpected. So what's going to happen tomorrow? And it's happening in the world. World is not conscious of this. And on the other side, two bhaiyajis from the west and the east are speaking. Brother Trump and Brother Putin are speaking to each other. Now, can you imagine that these things, how and why, I mean, all your future predictions, we thought that Third World War was going to happen, and how things, because there is a pressure, and this pressure is the pressure of truth, it is relentless, and one day one has to yield. The only difference is if you yield unwilling, then you will be hit hard, but when you yield willingly, you are saved. See, 52 years back, she gave the message. Right now, there is much hypocrisy in the international dealings. In Rice in a Dialogue, one of the things that the politicians are speaking, there is so much of hypocrisy in dealing with each other. At least people have begun to see it and speak about it. And then people say, where is supramental action going on? Because they are expecting suddenly golden beings with halo and golden hair coming out. Yeah, that will also happen. But let first people open. Individuals who are opening, they can experience all this inside. That's why I keep saying that people will continue to doubt that God shall grow up while the wise men talk and sleep. They'll continue to doubt and debate whether there is a supramental action going or not. Let them continue. There are people who are far ahead in the journey and they know it is happening because it's happening inside them. And when it happens inside them, they become aware of what is happening in the world. Because you can become only like, knows like, oh, this is similar action which is happening. So she says, tell the ego. This is truly interesting. This is the only solution. There is no other. All the rest, it is aspirations, conceptions, expectations. See, he is going beyond all these. It is still the Superman. It is not the supramental. Just imagine, she is now taking that leap. After 19th November, she is speaking about 19th November 1969. It is a higher humanity which tries to draw the whole of its humanity upward. But that is of no use, of no use. Now why? Because now it is supermind acting. It is pushing, opening, thrusting itself inside, spreading. I mean, it's out of human control. It's a chain reaction. All that you need is open. See, long back Shurubindu would say only one thing. Open to the mother, open to the mother. Be receptive to her. That's all that is required. The picture is very clear of this whole humanity which clings in order to climb. which seeks to hold like that, but which does not give itself. How to open? Give. To want is like, you know, that's why she has used the word aspiration. I want this, I want. Ultimately, at its root, it's an upward turning flame, beautiful. But still, but to give oneself, so beautiful it is. It wants to take. And that will not do. It must do away with itself. Then the thing with a capital T will be able to come and take its place. The whole secret is there. She has given us the ultimate secret of the yoga. And Shobindo spoke of that. One of the chief secrets of this yoga, keys of this yoga, is to open psychically to the mother. What is psychic opening? It gives. It doesn't question, tries to want, expect, desire, nothing. For example, all this side of humanity that wants to take things by force and pulls them up there, gesture indicating high on the forehead. You know, Kundalini, all these people try to do these things and try to bring down all these things. She says, It is interesting, but it is not that. What is needed instead of is to give. So trying to do it by force. It is not that. All these possibilities must be exhausted so that something in humanity is able to understand that there is only that. Mother opens her hands in a gesture of self-effacement. Annul thyself that only God may be. And then to let oneself be prostrate till one disappears. How beautiful this is. How powerful. How liberating. Instant liberation. All this wanting to be yogi, tapasvi, get this experience, that experience, trying all kinds of things. Just give yourself. And some people, it's a grace that this happens. Indeed, that is the most difficult thing, to learn to disappear. Well, my child, mother laughs, we shall get there. To learn to disappear. How beautiful this is. Disappear in the divine. Durai Swami Iyer would say, you know, when he was a famous judge in the a lawyer, advocate in the Supreme Court and Saturday Sunday. Of course, what she is speaking of much, much higher and deeper truth. So when he would come Saturday, Sunday and be in the evening talks, this one day he received a telegram on Saturday that there is an urgent need in the Supreme Court. Durai Swami Iyer must come immediately. His telegram came and he said, send them a telegram that Durai Swami Iyer is dead. He will be alive again on Monday. I mean, what matters? Just your personality, you are somebody, so and so, who's who, what is there? How does it matter? And that is the difficulty. One more thing, at the end of this year, 1969, this is 27 December 1969, this is a conversation which ends with, and this is, she says, it's all a question of attitude that your consciousness takes. And then, as I have said, okay, a little bit before that, it is so to such a degree that the attitude towards certain vibrations brings you complete ease, or it can make you completely sick. The same thing. Why? Because we want to change the outer circumstances. And it is the same vibration. Things like that, things bewildering. And every minute it is like that. Every minute for everything. Well, the consciousness here takes a certain attitude and then it is all delight and harmony. And the thing remains the same. Nothing has changed outside. But then, gesture of just a tilt to the left. A slight change in the attitude of the consciousness and the thing becomes almost unbearable. So we want circumstances to change, but we should shift the needle. That's it. Experience of this kind all the time. It must be, to put it into words, that we understand the presence of the ego and the abolition of the ego. It is that. So seeing in people, that's why very often people would say, but they go to mother, and Sri Aurobindo has a letter to it. You want us to act like a tribunal of justice? This person has done wrong, this should happen, this person. No. You continue with the same circumstance. Still you have learned the lesson. It's not the circumstance, it's your attitude which is the problem. And sometimes it takes such a painful learning. So she says, and then, as I have said, for all the actions of life, even the most ordinary, it is demonstrated that if the presence of the ego is suffered, and she's saying people have to go through this, surely to make you understand what it is, it can really lead to an imbalance of health, and that the only remedy is the disappearance of the ego, and at the same time the disappearance of all illness. For things that we consider quite unimportant, quite, and it is for everything, all the while, night and day. And this ego is at every level, like at the physical, there is the physical ego. There is a physical fear of dissolution of the body, for example. So body, bodily ego. Oh, I am growing old, I am looking. Some people don't want to use even a stick. Why? No. Because using a stick means you are like an old person. What is? It's all part of the physical ego. Some people like to color hairs. Some people like to... all kinds of things to look young. What is there? What is there in the body to... I mean, color the soul fully in her. All the rest, okay, nothing wrong in coloring hair. It's okay, each one's choice. And then it is complicated by all the misunderstandings and discontentments that come out, as though they were unfastened. And she makes a gesture, the whole cartload is poured upon her. Everybody comes and gives their grievance and puts it on her. And all that falls at the same time in order that the experience might be total and in all domains. She is not complaining. She is saying this so that I can have the complete experience of everything that is going on in the human consciousness. It is as though a practical demonstration was being given at every minute of the presence of death and of the presence of immortality like this. At every second, as if you were called upon to choose between death and immortality. Ego is death, disappearance of the ego is immortality. And for that, I see the body must go through a serious and very thorough preparation in order to be able to bear the impact of the experience without any vibration of anxiety or recoil, or it must be able to maintain its peace and its constant smile. And then she closes with this beautiful little phrase. As though in everything we were required to live the presence of the opposites, to find what is there when the opposites join together. This is where we had started. So that's how people have to go through. Things which you don't want to see, don't want to confront, you want to avoid, they will definitely come. So I have seen, at least with me, even physically, if I am driving a scooter and suddenly I see a ditch or this thing, I know for sure I am going to land through it. I don't know why it happens. So you land it instead of avoiding. It's almost like that become my focus. My mind is so attentive on that, that instead of avoiding, it's like you go through it. I'm not talking of big ditches, of course, they put all this very good. But in, so this is where your minds, these things come ultimately. Through contraries, we move towards God. And so things will come in life, which are apparently even the contradiction of all that you hold within yourself as the best, the highest. And you have to go through it, offer it to her, see it, allow the divine consciousness to come, tell the ego to step aside. All these are methods of this yoga. People ask, what is the method? What is the method? This is the method. Instead of running away when they join, that produces a result, and that in the practical life. See, that's how mother could keep with her people who would not see each other eye to eye. Very different. Totally, almost, if they met each other, they would fight. How she could keep all the vibrations impacting her. And so this way she says, union of the opposites in the supermind. It's only possible if ego at every level goes away. That means, I am nothing, the divine is everything, to put it in very simple words. Okay. Jai Ma.